the buzzer, McCord on its way. Oh my goodness!
They have to get it. No timeouts, they do. Florida.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Yes, it is. It's Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic. I am Dan Dokic, along with Seth Greenberg, two-time ACC Coach of the Year, and the Coach Whisperer, who had to do a little whispering this week. We will get into that. Special guest today. I think the best football coach, college football coach ever, and my friend Urban Meyer is going to join us to talk coaching. And Seth, it leads me right into this. Last week, during the week, you and I were in studio the night Evansville went on the road to Kentucky and beat then number one Kentucky. Seth, that same Evansville team Monday night lost at home to SMU, a team that was missing a couple guys, waiting for a guy to get eligible. Seth, Lou Holtz said on my show, and I want to talk to you about this, and I want to get Urban's thoughts on this. Lou Holtz said on my show, the team you have today isn't the team you have yesterday, and it won't be the team you have tomorrow. It is a mother backing up wins in college basketball and keeping 18 to 22-year-olds on the same plane. Talk to me about this, Seth Greenberg.
Well, I experienced it. We went into Kansas. How about this week? Within 7 days, we go to VCU when I'm at Long Beach State. We play actually Pacific on a Thursday night, win, get on a plane on a red eye after the game. Unfortunately, it's delayed. We're supposed to play VCU on a Monday. We don't get there till Monday afternoon. That's how messed up the travel was. And VCU beat us by 100. Actually, 34, to be honest with you. I didn't get thrown out, but I should have gotten thrown out.
Sure.
Then we board a plane and we go to Lawrence, Kansas, who's number one in the country. We're supposed to play them on a big Monday. They're on an off week and we play them on a Monday. And, you know, we absolutely just practice about as hard as I've ever had to practice the day before a game. We beat Kansas. Pretty good. We fly back from Kansas. All right. We've got Cal State Northridge on the road, the Matadors, and we lose the game. And really what it comes down to is you've got to get your team back to neutral. You know, it's never as good as you think it is. It's never as bad as you think it is. You got to get to the next game, the next play. And I did everything I could. Like that Sunday night when we got back to Long Beach, I had the framed poster for everyone of the headline after the Kansas game. And at our dinner, I presented each guy. I said, look, they'll never take this game away from us, but we've got to move on because we've got to get ready for the next game. The next game was Northridge. All right. That should be our standard. How we play against Kansas should be our standard. All right. That's what I'm going to hold you guys against the rest of the season. And we absolutely laid an egg. Now, what happened after that, though, is we ripped off about 16 in a row. And the reason we did is because I made sure that it got those guys understood. Basically, it's never as good as you think it is. It's never as bad as you think it is. You have to have a standard. But the amount of static around players and the expectation, this is what I'm going to ask Urban also, and the expectation the media has on people and the microscope that people are under, it is absolutely brutal. And I did not expect Evansville to win that game.
No, I didn't either. Last night, I didn't either. I really didn't, just knowing players. You know, the star of the previous game, Cundiff, he couldn't make a bucket. You know, it is literally that way. The team you had yesterday isn't the team you have today, and it won't be the team you have tomorrow. College basketball, because you play, as you just documented, in terms of how many games you play in such a short time, I'll tell you what, it's hard. But I'll also say this, and I know Kentucky's banged up, but right now Kentucky not very good. I mean, Mark Madsen almost took his Utah Valley team in there and got him on Monday night.
Very fragile. When I look at Kentucky, I look at a fragile team. I look at a team that's so fragile offensively that it has impacted the area where they can really impact the game, and that's defensively. I look at a Kentucky team that they're searching for who's going to take over. You thought it was going to be Tyrese Maxey. He was not ready to play yesterday in terms of, I mean, the turnovers he made early in the game were just sophomoric. I mean, well, he's a freshman, so I guess sophomoric would be a good thing. You could see that the uncertainty of across the board. Now, the positive is your guy, Nick Richards. Two baseline jumpers, came up with a big offensive rebound. That's great. They have to go zone. The thing that you thought was going to be the strength of this Kentucky team, their ability to dominate the ball and defend the basketball. Let me tell you something. They couldn't keep Utah Valley in front. Now, everyone is spreading them out. And you know, they're playing against different types of styles that they won't see in the SEC. Everyone's spreading them out. Everyone's creating a switch with Sestina on a small, and then they're just driving them. So you know what? They've got to make a decision. Like, they've got to go more pack line or beating gaps, keep it in front, take away splits, pressure the ball, and not get spread out so far. Because when you have to guard the whole court, especially the way the game is officiated now, good players, not great players, good players are going to drive you and either get fouled or drive you and make a kick out, make one more pass, and shoot an open three. So they've got some issues. They've got to get Emmanuel Quickley back. They've got to get E.J. Montgomery back. They've got to figure out how they're going to use Keon Brooks. They are a very fragile team right now.
I think. Well, I'm going more to the broader picture of teams that don't handle success. I would argue this. I remember, and this is going back a long time, in terms of Maxey. And I always wonder about this. And I love Dickie V, but I remember Dickie V, Omar Cook made a bunch of threes in the Garden, like in the preseason NIT. And Dick was talking about how he's a first rounder, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Well, I don't think Omar Cook was ever the same. And I swear to God, I had a flashback to Maxey this year. Maxey throws in a couple shots in the Garden. And next thing you know, oh, he's a superstar. Man, you use the word static, and static is so right. I'm also going to get into this. Urban Meyer's best teams at Florida, and I'm going to ask him this. I may start off with this. We're all about incredible competition in practice. Like his national championship, one, I can't remember which one at Florida, the practices were brutal. I mean, brutal. You don't really have that in college basketball among the elite because, well, right now we got guys using only eight guys, like Kay only doesn't use a whole lot. Kentucky's got a bunch of guys hurt. Do you think that the old school, man, practice is harder than the game, and we're going to, you know, it's going to be easier playing against whoever than it is against each other? Do you think that still floats today in college basketball?
Yeah, I think it floats. I think the best teams aren't afraid to – coaches aren't afraid to coach their teams.
Not saying that. Not saying that at all. I'm not saying coach your team. I'm not saying that. I'm saying competition.
Not being afraid to coach your team is coaching your team hard and making every practice competitive.
I'm not saying that either.
If you don't have competition in practice, how do you expect your team to compete in a game?
Yeah, but can you do – because most teams now – or maybe I'm wrong about this. It seems like most teams now whittle this bad boy down quick. Like Kay doesn't use all his scholarships. A lot of guys don't use all their scholarships. Back in the day, everybody used 15 and away you went. Now guys want to shorten it because, you know, less players, less problems.
Now there's only 13.
Yeah, now there's only 13. So you think that you can on a daily basis compete like crazy on the court in practice?
Yeah, I think you can. I think you can. I don't think you can do it every single day, but I think you can do it enough where you can create that environment. I'll tell you what, Cal does Camp Cal right after the first semester's over. And I'll tell you, they go at it.
Yeah.
They go twice a day and they go at it. One's going to be really hard, competitive, every single play and every single thing they do is going to be charted, and there's going to be a winner and a loser. I'll tell you who else does it. Chris Beard. Everything they do is competitive. There is nothing they do that isn't competitive. There is nothing they do that isn't a winner and a loser. And I think you can do that. Now, like, you know, the whole idea of the reason guys are going to 8 and 9, when you're recruiting one and done, obviously these kids want to have a great year and get out. So literally you're only looking for one perimeter sub, one wing sub, and one front court sub, because you're creating that scenario in the recruiting process that, you know what, we're going to put you on the stage. You're going to play yourself into a lottery, a first round pick or whatever. Now that is an issue.
Yeah.
And eventually, if you have some issues, injuries like Kentucky's having, or if you make some mistakes in recruiting, it can impact you. Here's the other thing. Let me give you another question. We talk about the best teams in college basketball, right? All right. So let's look at this. Best teams in college basketball. Duke, one of the best teams, right? They're number one right now, right?
Yep.
They're shooting 30% from 3-point line.
Yeah.
Virginia, who I think is a legitimate Final Four candidate team. I actually think they could be a Final Four team. All right, because their defense is so good. They're shooting 20% from the 3-point line. If you look at the top five in college basketball, top six, top seven, Kentucky was one for, I think, 12 last night. It is amazing, the shooting. Now, I'll tell you who's shooting well. Louisville. Louisville shooting 44%.
Let me ask you a question.
That are outliers. Do you have to be up to shoot the three to win a national championship?
Let me ask you that. Let me add to that. The line moved back this year, Seth. I mean, do you think that's affecting it? And does that affect the answer or the answer to the question you just gave? I'm going to say you got to be able to make threes. I don't know. You got to be able to make them as high at a higher rate, but the line has moved back. Has that affected things? Cause you're not seeing guys. Here's what I'm not seeing, Seth. I'm not seeing guys curl off a screen at the 3-point line, jump up and shoot it like they did before. I'm not seeing guys. I'm seeing more step into your shot threes as opposed, because the line's just a little bit farther. My answer to your question would be, yeah, I think you still got to be able to make threes, right now, probably not. At the end of the year, I think guys will adjust and I think they'll shoot a higher percentage. Do you think the line has made a difference or is this just bad shooting?
I think there's a confusion a little bit. You got the women's line and our line. All right. I think that's an issue. I think, it, you know, guys are trying to figure out, get behind it, get set. I think coaches are all, this is my pet peeve. Every coach in the country is running spread ball screens and continuity ball screens. And 3/4 of the guys that are coming up those ball screens don't know how to read all 5 defenders. Like yesterday, there was a play in a Kentucky game where, and I think it was Maxey came off or Higgins came off a high ball screen. The defender chased him. The big leveled him off. And all he had to do is snake and cut back and attack the big. He just kept dribbling and there was no play to be made. So like, I think everyone we get caught up in fashion. Why don't we, if we want to be a 3-point shooting team, there's more than one way to get a 3-point shot. You know, get a paint touch, make a pass, make an extra pass. That's great. How about going getting guys 3-point shots? How about putting like 2 high double drags and having rescreen and get a pin down for the guys you want? Like I look at Kentucky, their best 3-point shooter is Nate Sestina. Like making him a screener, unless he's a screen and pop or a guy that's curling off him and he can shape. That's probably the best way to use him. So I think guys haven't figured out how to get guys shots besides trying to get paint touches and kickouts. There's more ways to get threes where guys can get behind the ball and turn in on the catch. So I think it'll be better, but I look and see a lot of bad shooting teams. Now look, Gonzaga is a good shooting team. No doubt about it. I mean, are they a Final Four contender? Sure. Louisville's a good shooting team. There are outliers there. Are those teams going to be able to separate themselves? Because, you know, a number of elite teams just can't shoot it right now. And I'm not sure I'm not sure Duke's ever going to be a great 3-point shooting team. They're who's making shots? Matthew Hurt, a freshman. Who else makes shots for their team?
I've been watching them. I've got them on Thursday and Friday.
You have confidence Trey Jones is going to be a 35-40% 3-point shooter?
He hit him the other night, but no, I think I've said this before. Alex O'Connell is big, man. Alex O'Connell to me for Duke. I know they moved him into the starting lineup the last 3.
Will he guard?
You got to guard
because Wendell Moore has struggled a little bit getting going.
Yeah, and Wendell Moore is going to be very good. I like everything about Wendell Moore. I think by the end of the year, Wendell Moore might be their second most important player behind Tyrese Jones. But Seth, I don't know because I'll tell you this much. I don't like Michigan State shooting. I don't like Kentucky shooting. I don't like Duke shooting. I don't. I watch Michigan State and I say, hey, look, Cassius Winston's going, you know, he's Cassius Winston and he just came out the other day and thanked the fans and they're keeping him going
That was beautiful.
Yeah. It? Yeah. And we have to mention that because he's such a great dude. But I don't like their shooting. I tell you the team I like and I keep talking about them because they got 4 or 5 guys that can all make a bunch and one's going to be hot almost every night is Ohio State. I don't like Purdue shooting. You mentioned Texas Tech. You tell me, can they shoot it?
Texas Tech will be a good shooting team, not a great shooting team. I think there'll teams that emerge. Like Kansas is shooting better after that first game where they basically continued to throw it to the wrong team. That'll be an interesting thing. I think Michigan State, quite honestly, I think they're going to continue to get better because I think Malik Hall and Rocket Watts are going to continue to get better, which is going to build their depth. And when they build their depth, they are tenacious defensively, even though Cassius is not a great on-ball defender.
Yeah.
They're developing depth, and they've got a toughness about them. I think Michigan State's going to be fine. Seton Hall's an interesting team because they can really shoot it. Carolina's relying so much on Cole Anthony to create offense and make shots. I'm interested to see how they do against like-sized talent.
I want to talk about Seton Hall. I mean, I know Kevin Willard is the guy everybody loves and all that, but they're on probation. I wish I knew the NCAA cared about tampering, because I could have turned a lot of people in when Ron Lewis left me at Bowling Green and a bunch of other guys. I wish that I knew. They didn't really care, I don't think, about Bowling Green tampering, but they sure cared in this case, and they put that Holloway.
No love for the Falcons. Huh? No love for the Falcons.
No, you know that. Hey, you can say whatever you want. It's a membership organization, but there are tiers to membership. And I learned very quickly that Bowling Green is a member in name only. But what do you think about that? I mean, we're going to have Urban here in a minute, but what do you think about that?
I think that, you know, first of all, it was a guy that was recruited by both schools early on, Torian Thompson. That's what it was over. Torian Thompson was struggling a little bit. You know, again, there's always a backstory. As you always say, there's always a backstory in everything. And in recruiting, especially if they change the recruiting rules, tampering will be an epidemic. But it's not just recruiting the guy. It's recruiting his circle of influence. And I got to be honest with you. I think that happens each and every day. I think it happens to mid-major guys that get recruited right off their rosters once they kind of separate themselves. I think it also happens when there are coaching changes. So I was surprised he got the 3-year probation. You know, it's more of a slap on the wrist. He had to sit 3 games. You know, they've got to kind of go in the corner, wear a dunce hat, and behave themselves now for a while. It's not going to impact Kevin. It's not going to impact the amount of money he's making. It's not going to impact his relationship with Zay D. But tampering goes on each and every day. If you walk into a high major coach's office, somewhere in that office, there's going to be a board of the best mid-major players in the country that have redshirted and could graduate early and could be grad transfers and transfer. I guarantee you 60% of the coaches in the country coaching at high majors have a list somewhere in their office, all right, of the players they're actually trying to recruit off someone else's team, like you went through at Bowling Green. That's the way it is. I think tampering is an epidemic in college basketball when it comes to recruiting.
Do you think this stops it?
No, I don't think this says that. Look, this stops it. The FBI investigation doesn't stop anything. So you think a 3-game slap on the wrist suspension is going to impact it? We had the FBI basically having guys on wiretape saying strong ass offer, and that hasn't stopped the damn thing. They just signed a 5-star a guard at LSU the other day. So no, do I think this stops it? No, I think this has no impact on it whatsoever. Not even an iota of an impact, because what we've seen over the last year is that despite everything, and we got your playbook, and we've got this, and we've got that, we've basically seen absolutely crickets.
That's no lie. And it's a sad state, because I think people in general are getting a little bit fed up with every time you open up ESPN.com, what are you reading about in college basketball? You're reading about garbage. You know, you're reading about this guy did this. And why can't we just all just do it right and figure it all out, because we're supposed to be guardians of the game and blah, 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 blah.
Oh, don't give me the guardians of the game. Look, that's like everyone's saying, if you put a sign in your building, you have a culture. That sign is, no, it's a sign. It's not a culture.
All right.
Either you live it a certain way or you don't. It's plain and simple. You can have all the signs you want. You can have all the sayings you want. You can have all the, you know, sound bites you want. That's great. Until there's a absolute consequence to actions, nothing will change.
I've said for years, man, ban coaches that knowingly cheat. In fact, Urban and I talked about this on the air one day. Ban coaches. Look, if you want to cheat, fine. I mean, go ahead. We catch you. You knowingly cheat. Major violation, not minor violations, not mistakes, but knowingly do it. You ban them from coaching Division I basketball. Go coach Division II. Go coach Division III. Go coach high school. Go coach NAI. No one's saying you can't may have a career in coaching, but just you can't coach the level with which you cheated at, because, quite frankly, you've shown that you weren't capable of being trusted. I think that would – I just think this, Seth. I think this in all
areas.
Here's
the thing. Like, America doesn't care.
Doesn't care.
Like the AD at LSU gets fired. Like they don't care. Like they care if it's someone else's school. They don't care if it's their school. They just want to win. In fact, they get to the point if something happens, they will that's a successful program. They will defend it to the very bitter end. They don't care. It's societal. It's just the way it is. But you know what? Here's the deal. This is going to be an interesting, you know, we can complain all we want. Once the games start, only people care about the games, and we're going to have the one. I think this year, even though the games have been ugly to start, we're going to have one of the more interesting years in college basketball, because players are going to emerge, teams are going to emerge. But The one thing I really want to speak to Coach Meyer about is, and I got to call him Coach Meyer. I know he's your guy, Urban, because, I mean, you guys work together. But when a guy has multiple national championships, I got to throw Coach in front of his name.
I don't blame you. I do, too.
You know, but when I want to ask him, and because I've talked to a number of coaches in the last few days about players, they have high profile freshmen. And I did the Florida game the other day and I didn't actually speak to Mike White about this, but the static around a high profile prospect, maybe it's not the parents, maybe it's the media. Like the media hypes these guys and they want to validate their evaluation. So if those guys aren't playing well, they got to point a finger at something or, they'll want to make excuses. The deal is college basketball is hard. The transition to college basketball is hard. And like the pressure that's on these kids to get to the league and be there 7 months and be ready and show, you know, play their game and put up numbers far exceeds the idea of playing and being a winning player. And I'm interested. So that's the same pressures in football. In other words, we see it in basketball now. I mean, it's incredible the pressure these young players are under to instead of the natural process that you go through in basically learning how to be a teammate, learning how to play hard, learning to understand the game, understanding being a winning player, playing a role, championing a role. It has nothing to do with that. You can see it each and every day. These young players, there's so much pressure on them. Except for the quarterback position, is the same type of pressure on a great running back, a wide receiver, a corner. I mean, how does that translate in another sport? Before we get to Urban Meyer, we need to mention today's sponsor, Roman. Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually we just brush it off or blame ourselves by saying things like, I lost my mojo. Or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work. Or, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it's easy to talk about it. With a real doctor who can prescribe real medication, it's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you get a free online evaluation and ongoing ED care, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. The doctors will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to roman.com/courtside and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Just go to roman.com/courtside to get a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. That's roman.com/courtside for a free visit to get started. Get roman.com/courtside.
Hey, I think, and I said this back, I don't even know when the hell he came to Bowling Green, like 99, 90, I don't know. But the first workout I ever saw in the weight room, a kid named Gerling, a wide receiver at Bowling Green, comes running up to me. I wanted to go see Urban Meyer's workouts in the weight room. He's like, this is the greatest ever. And Urban was killing him at the time. And I told everybody that I know this guy's going to be great. And he turns out to be, in my opinion, the best football coach ever in college and football, Urban Meyer. And hey, Urban, we appreciate you coming on. I know it's not football, but appreciate you taking a few minutes with us, my friend.
Of course.
Hey, we were talking about this. The other day, Evansville goes into number one in the country, Kentucky, and beats them. Beat the number one team. Evansville is not very good. They come home last night, and they get beat by an SMU team that is missing three players. Urban, Lou Holtz, your guy, said to me one time on my radio show, the team you have yesterday isn't the team you have today and won't be the team tomorrow. How does that equate in your coaching career? How did you deal with all of that?
I that's incredible. I didn't know that story, but to say I'm completely astonished, I'm not. I mean, we've all had teams show up and you're like, what the hell is this? And then other ones, you know, you show up and it's like a fine tuned machine. So, you know, college athletic team, an athletic team is a living organism. That's why I tell people, and and you have to feed it, you have to control it, you have to work it. And it's different today, like Coach Holt says today, than it is tomorrow. And I mean, when you just told me that, I mean, my gosh. But then I look back at some of the teams that I've been around, and that's where I the leaders on the team and the coaching staff, the alignment has got to be so critical. And I watch now from a different seat, obviously on television now, and I get to watch so much more football than I, when you're locked in on your own team. And it's amazing the highs and lows, the ebbs and flows that teams have. But when you evaluate your career, my career, and you look back, I mean, I remember watching your Bowling Green team go in that little gym. What was that?
Anderson Arena.
Anderson Arena, and you beat the team up north. You beat the Wolverines. And then, a little bit later, whatever you see, you lose to someone, you see in a game with someone, you should just beat the brakes off them. So it's an amazing thing, the college athlete and the athletic team.
Coach, we were just kind of in line with that. We were just talking about static. Like, you know, today with social media, with the pressures of family, gurus, agents, hangers-on, in our sport, especially in basketball, the amount of pressure these young players are on to – produce and get out almost exceeds the idea of getting to school, being a winning player, and understanding the process. Do you guys experience that same static and the number of different people's pulling at players that take away from the good of the group on the football side?
I felt it. I've been fortunate. I felt it 10 years ago, Florida. I started feeling it because that was my first exposure to that type of thing. At Utah and Bowling Green, no, not at all. At Florida, I started experiencing it. Obviously, the better you get, and then all of a sudden, I'm starting to hear about agents around our program, runners, and you start feeling it. Now, you feel it every day. You feel it, with these, Nick Bosa came up to me last year and said, I'm going to go to the NFL, and the year before, I had a kid named Denzel Ward that I'm going to skip the bowl game and go to the NFL. And those are two of the greatest kids I've ever been around. This is not selfish nonsense. This is something I sat back and I said, I understand. I get it. Do I agree with it? No, I don't agree with it, but I certainly, certainly understand it. And I have never felt it like I do now in college football. I mean, it's every day now. Once, Ryan's dealing with it, he's got one of the best teams in America, a team that's loaded with NFL talent. And it's every day. And the other thing you feel is maybe the player that's not having the greatest career and sees someone who is that family certainly doesn't put pressure on the kid. They put pressure on the coach and say, what'd you guys do? You screwed it up and I'm going to leave. And that's the other part of it, the transfer portal. So this is a unique time in sports. And I got news. Throw one more thing in this in a couple of years, name and likeness. Mm-hmm. Just throw that right in the middle of that and see how this thing's going to go.
How do you think it'll go?
Oh, I think it's going to be a mess. I think it's going to be, I think players will have agents. I think, 17-year-olds, I think in the recruiting trail, I just have a vision of going in a kid's home and, he's 17, 16 years old and you're sitting there with an agent and the parents and they're talking about, opportunity for endorsements and those type of things when you're 16 years old. Yeah, I it's hard to comprehend.
Urban, I tell coaches, a lot of coaches listen to this podcast, and I tell coaches all the time, if you want to learn how to develop leadership on your team, study Urban Meyer, because you did a number of things, did you not, in terms of building leadership in your team? Would you mind talking about a few of the things that you did inside your locker room to build leadership?
Sure. I've always studied. That was something that is 30 years ago. I remember that if it was Tom Osborne speaking at a clinic, I remember getting in a car and driving 6 hours to go listen to him for an hour and a half and leave and go home and drive another 6 hours. So I was always in reading books and really enthralled by what's amazing, Dan, is in college athletics in corporate America, they spend billions on leadership training. And what I found out, this is about 8 years ago, is in college athletics, very minimal amount of resources because everybody thought they were leaders. I was a leader and I would do leadership training every year. What I found out is that I was good at it, but I didn't have a set curriculum. And I met a guy named Tim Kite, who I work with closely. And I think we, did as good a job as anybody, but we've had leadership training. And when you have a speaker come in, this is a quote I use, is that average leaders use quotes and speakers. Good leaders have a plan. Elite leaders have a system. And we've developed a system over the years about leadership training. And our guys, it's been, you know, your leadership and your culture get tested in adversity, not when you're beating, you know, Bowling Green or Miami, Ohio by 45 points. It gets tested in adversity. And the program we put here together and Coach Day's continuing, it has been phenomenal.
Can you talk about a couple of specific things that you put in terms of leadership?
Sure. There's two components that we want to be part of the DNA of all players, all staff members. And it's called the simple system for appropriate behavior. And that is, it's called R factor. And that's, you can't control the events in your life. It's E plus R equals O. You can't control events in your life. You can certainly control how you respond, and that'll help to the desired outcome. So events happen every day in life. For example, in a college kid, everybody's smoking dope, they're out drinking. You got to get up and leave. That's called making the proper response to an event you're in. And how do you do it? You press pause, you get your mind right, and you step up and do the right thing. So that's always the R factor. The second part is part of, and that happens every year. Every spring, we have a whole workshop on it with our staff. Any new staff members have to become experts in it. We wear wristbands around our wrist to remind us about our factor, to make the right responses when you're hit with a situation. That's coach and player. The second one is a simple system for appropriate relationship, and it's called the Brotherhood of Trust. And the two greatest forms of motivation are love and ownership. And that whole thing is about, we teach people how to trust each other, not only players, but most importantly, coaches. It's amazing that coaches don't, you think you get measured by your intentions. You actually get measured by your actions. So we teach people about the brotherhood of trust and the triad of trust, we call it. And then I always pick one in the summer, whether it be win the moment, the grind, whatever it may be. I've had every summer would be the mantra, and Ryan Day's this year is tough love. And then we have a leadership workshop on that. So we wanted to have something that's part of our DNA that will impact them not only for their time at Ohio State, but when they leave.
Going into that, coach, like if you had one bit of advice to give a young coach that's transitioning from an assistant coach to a head coach, what would the most important piece of advice you could give a coach understanding that journey and that transition from one seat to the next?
Yeah, it's that you have to be yourself and you have to have a vision. And other than leadership, the most misunderstood and overused word is culture. One of the things I have to do here is I meet with all 36 coaches at Ohio State, and every one of them I've said, tell me your culture. And a common thread is, well, culture is very important. I said, I know that, but what is your culture? And it's amazing to me, but then I look back at my career and could I really, when I was a young coach, say this, I have a vision, but do I know my culture? And if more importantly, if your players can't spit it back at you and your staff, then you really don't have one. You maybe have a vision, but if your players don't share in that vision and your coaches, then it's simply that is you, it's your vision. It's not a culture. Culture is something that looks, feels, and acts like when it's displayed. So, for example, the culture of Ohio State football is one of the hardest, fastest playing teams, play fearless. So it was a relentless effort. The second part of the culture is I want our players to understand we're going to work harder, embrace discomfort, because I don't want to bitch about practice, and because we're going to work really, really hard and embrace it. That's why you're going to win. And the third one is, how do we get through the hard times? You have to love one another. We call that power of the unit. So one of our players had to memorize it. It was constantly used on social media throughout the facility. We used messaging. And so that would be the biggest thing. When you become the head coach, it's your culture. But make sure everyone's aligned. And before you can be aligned, make sure they understand what it is.
Do you think culture and identity go hand in hand? We're watching a lot of basketball teams right now that have no identity. Do you think that's tied to their lack of culture? Do you just think that that's a part of the season where people haven't figured themselves out?
Yeah, I think identity at times shifts, and it depends on your personnel and, are you a spread offense or are you I formation? And, I don't understand basketball a little bit, but certainly not to you guys' degree. But I think identity at times is fluid. I think culture is concrete. So I think, and that's a great question, but I think your identity, when you have Dwayne Haskins, your identity is a little bit different than when you have JT Barrett or Justin Fields. I don't want to devalue identity, but the identity is more to on the court or on the field. This to me is much deeper than that. This is what gets exposed when, when tariffs show up in corporate America, or a downturn in the economy, or your best player gets injured. Those are things that, to me, culture takes over.
Urban, now, we were talking earlier about competition in practice. Now, I wasn't there, but I've read your teams at Florida were insane competing against each other, offense and defense. How much of that can you still do in coaching right now?
Much less. Pete Carroll was the first guy that I really studied that was his whole mantra at USC. And he was, when I went to Florida, that was the team in America. And I studied him. I don't really know Coach Carroll, but I just studied. I said that we're going to do that. No more redshirting. We're going to be the most competitive. And I was actually at Utah at the time, and we became, everything was winner loser. I mean, when I say everything, from academic performance, we broke kids into teams, to every workout became, and you know me, I'm over the top. Anyways, it became a do or die type situation every day. And it worked. We went on to the BC. We called it Run for the BCS at Utah. And then at Florida was the Run for the National Title. And it worked. Well, today is so different. You're so horrified about players getting hurt. I think just the safety and welfare of players. You know, back then, you know, our inside drills were much harder than any game they're ever going to play in. And we've backed way off. And for the right reasons. You know, back in, you got to figure when in 2003 and four, there wasn't the mandate for safety of players. And we certainly cared deeply about it, but it's a much different game now than it was.
Coach, you talk about jobs, and I'm talking about any sport. If a young coach is looking to try to become a head coach and he's looking at a job, what makes a good job? Like what makes a job that a young coach should kind of say, you know what? That works. What do you need to have a chance to win? What do you think the elements that you need in place to have a chance to win, no matter the sport?
Well, I'm going to give you just a quick 2-second story that Coach Doc remembers. And that was, I was offered the job at Bowling Green and I turned it down in 2001. And Lou Holtz, I called him up. And so, and he's the one that pushed me for the job. And I said, Coach, I'm going to turn it down. And he said, why? And I said, well, you know, the coach are 1-10 or 2-9. That's just not a good job. And he goes, well, of course not. If it was a good job, they wouldn't be calling you. So point being is he said, take a job and make a good job. My advice to my coaches that have long gone on, and I've had 15 or 18 of them that have left me to go be head coaches, is the number one thing, can you get players there? What's your recruiting base? You know, don't tell me about the size of your locker room. Don't tell me about where is your footprint to get players. And if it's not strong, don't take that job. Don't take that job, because it's you can be Newt Rockne and you're not going to win. Not in college athletics, because you know you don't draft them; you have to recruit them.
You're recruiting your geographic footprint, man. That's the key.
When you look at college football today, do you ever I don't know if you started the spread, but you certainly had impact on the spread. Bowling Green is 1,000 times better than when you got there, even now. Utah, the same. Florida, 2 national championships. Ohio State, I had a friend of mine tell me that was a big Ohio State guy. Look, everybody wins 75% of the games at Ohio State, and you won, I don't know, what, did you win 100% of your games? I don't know, you never freaking lost. But do you ever look back on the impact you've had at the different places you've been?
I do now, because I have so many friends in the coaching profession, and it's kind of fun to go speak at Utah and go up to Bowling Green and talk to my friends at Florida, and it's very humbling and very appreciative. And then I look at Ohio State right now and the recruiting base and how do you evaluate a recruiting job done by the staff is championships and NFL players. And my goodness, I watch those guys play now, and I go over there quite often, and it's everywhere, you know? So yeah, it's fun. The one thing I really appreciate is the fact that we made an impact in the schematics of, like you said, the spread offense. The group that you saw back in 01, we really didn't know what we were doing. You know, I had Dan Mullen, who's a brilliant coach and an excellent coaching staff, that we would stay up late at night, and we'd move it. I never forget that. Remember those nasty facilities we had, Dan?
Oh, yeah.
When it rained, we had to put buckets around to catch the rain in the meetings, and that orange shag carpet would get awful nasty in that rain. But we'd move the table aside and get, you know, pots of coffee and sit there for hours upon hours and do something that's really never been done before. And that was the spread offense, the way we did it. And that was incredible to see. It permeated. Now it's in the NFL. it's kind of cool to see that.
It's interesting you say championships and put guys in the NFL because John Calipari's whole thing is, you know, the biggest day of the year for Kentucky basketball is the draft. And I understand that he wants to compete and win championships and go to Final Fours. Everyone does. But how much pressure is on a coach today to get the guy to finish his dream? I mean, how big a part of that is part of the process? And how much do you miss kind of that journey?
Well, I miss the journey about the focus being on team. And I think that air is out of the balloon. It will never be back. You know, once the money and, you know, a guy told me this, I was doing an interview and they said, you know, coaches are the reason and administrations and put so much, you know, emphasis is the reason now kids are skipping and bowl games and they're going to think about stepping out. And then you see an injury to Tua and the whole world's about why was he playing? And they say, you know, we're responsible for it. And I said, you're right. We're responsible because the product is so good and so popular. You know, college football has surpassed everybody other than Monday Night Football or football, pro football as far as viewership and interest. And with that comes beyond normal expectations that you have to deal with. You know, Ohio State, you can't lose a game. You have to beat the rival. You have to get all your players drafted in early rounds, and they have to act like really good citizens and graduate, you know, and that's it. And anything other than that is your failure. And that's the way it is. And if you don't like that, go, there's other places that don't have that same, you know, demands, but that's the way it is. And, you know, it's the positive and negative of things that have gone really well.
You know, you were at Florida, same thing, right? I mean, Florida was the same exact thing, was it not?
Yeah. I remember we went 13-1 and won the Sugar Bowl, and it was just a terrible season. So, yeah, that was 2009. It was, you know, we let down, you know, it was a really, really bad season. I remember answering those questions, and you're like, you got to be, and I felt that way more than the team and the fans, because, you know, fans are fans, but the internal destruction that you do to yourself, say, I can't believe we lost that one game. How did that happen? And other people look at you like you're out of your mind, you know.
When you were growing up, I mean, when we were growing up, teams lost. Teams lost. You know what I mean? They don't lose now. Like, you know, yeah. You know what? Clemson plays 12 games in the regular season. You know what the over-under was on wins for Clemson this season if you went to a gambling site?
I have no idea.
11.5, which means you're betting on undefeated. Undefeated used to – am I wrong about this, Urban? Undefeated used to be hard.
Used to be really hard. Now it's an expectation,
yes.
And it's not what happened. What happened? I know that. Amazing.
Would you ever get back in coaching? Nobody listens to this podcast, so you can say whatever the hell you want.
Listen to him. He's unbelievable.
The hardest day of, part of the day is the first 30 minutes of every morning. It's like it's down to about 30 minutes now. It used to be about an hour, hour and a half where I missed it so bad. But then I'm so into this Fox college football team that I have. I'm so into some other things, whether it be business opportunities, you know. So it's just really intriguing, this other world. I'm also into my grandchildren and my wife and family, and we're traveling and doing some cool things. I played Augusta 2 weeks ago. When you think I'd ever do that in the fall? So it's a nice life out there. You've been telling me for 10 years. I remember sitting on your house out with that little pond out back behind us. And, you know, this is a really good life outside of coaching. And I looked at you and said, man, it looks like it. You know, and then I got back on the phone and talked to recruits for the next 4 hours.
It is funny how it goes, though. You, me, Charlie Strong were sitting at the Florida National Championship game when I was out at Bowling Green. And you were on the phone. And Charlie was on the phone. I think Nate was with us too, actually. Nate was sitting there, your son. And I'm thinking, I got to get back in this. I'm watching these guys on the phone. God, I got to get back in this. But then I did. And I'm like, all right, things are good now. Hey, I want to thank you. You're doing an unbelievable job. You are must see TV on Fox. Really are. I know it's the ESPN podcast, but you're the best thing going on TV, man. You are. I tell you that every freaking week when I text you. It's great stuff.
Love you, neighbor.
See you, my man. Love you too, buddy.
Coach, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
You bet. Have a great day.
You too. That's the great Urban Meyer. He is terrific on Fox.
That was a clinic right there, Coach.
Yeah, I mean, he's that guy. You sit down with him, he can go anywhere you want to go. I mean, truthfully, he came over, he spent a couple of days with me 2 years ago what he was talking about. We just sat out back in this little area that I had and, you know, just talking about that kind of stuff and talking about life and what's out there. And I hope he doesn't go back. Yeah, actually, that's not true because I really like rooting for his teams. You know how you get football in my world? It's never been football against basketball, whether it was at Indiana because I loved Coach Mallory and all that. And Bowling Green, it was never football against basketball. Some schools are like that. And he was great, man. He'd come to practice. I'd go to his practices. He's just a great dude. Great dude.
Well, he's got a great perspective. And you know, let's face it, the leadership lessons that he taught his players obviously translate to the business world, which he could actually turn around. And I'm sure he's absolutely killing it on the speaking circuit. But more importantly, if someone listened to that, that's a lesson in life, a lesson in leadership, a lesson in parenting. It's, I mean, you can take those lessons he's talked about and apply it to any aspect of your life. And the parallels, you know, are so in line with it. It is interesting though, you know, he's down to 30 minutes. He ain't down to zero.
Oh no. Oh,
and
no,
you know what?
Man.
You know, your question was a good one because this is one of my favorite things, like fans in general. All right. The other guy's got 13 guys on scholarship from basketball. The other guy's going to practice every day. The other guy's trying to win. The fans, like I look at the Florida thing. I did a tweet yesterday about, you know, Florida, their young team. Mike White's a terrific coach. I mean, he was elite 2 years ago. And the venom of the Florida fan, like, first of all, since when did you guys become Kentucky and UCLA? All right. That's first and foremost. But secondly, like how unrealistic.
I got a story for
the
you.
The fan is absolutely incredible. I can't imagine what it would be Ohio State or the Florida football coach with the expectation that we should never lose.
I got a story.
Lose a game. I mean, lose one game and you're walking around like you've had an unsuccessful season. When you've been more successful than 99.9999% of the people that are telling you you had an absolutely awful, crappy season.
I did the Florida-Wisconsin ACC Big Ten Challenge a few years ago. Game's over. Bunch of guys from Florida were there, older guys, boosters, were with the coach. And I'm walking out of a Kohl Center, and they're walking out, and they say, hey, Dan, you know, they were very complimentary. We love you. But they said the only thing we don't like, they said the only thing we don't like about you is that you're friends with Urban Meyer. And I got pissed. I said, how can you guys at Florida say anything bad about Urban Meyer? He won you two freaking national championships. He beat every rival every time. If you look at Urban Meyer's record against rivals and you're a coach, do what he does because he beats his rival. Seth, I'm not going to lie to you and probably shouldn't say this. I'll fight for Urban Meyer. And it got really contentious between me and these three guys because these guys, Urban Meyer, Florida was great under Spurrier, but Florida hadn't always been great. It got really contentious because these guys were talking, were not talking very pleasant about my friend who had done so much for them. And I unloaded, Seth. I unloaded a string, and basically stood and said, whatever you want to do, let's do. And that's just how fans are. And he did so much stuff at Florida to help that place. It was unbelievable. But because you leave, however it is you leave, you're a bad guy in those places. And it, you know, because you're supposed to stay there forever because the fans want to enjoy what you're doing forever. And then they turn on you, which is why if you're smart in this day and age, you don't pay attention to anything. If you're a coach, nothing, zero, nada. Nothing.
No, 100%. But I'll tell you what the hard thing is, and we can wrap it up with this,
sure.
And I was talking to a coach yesterday, and it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, who's got a pretty good freshman, but he's been banged up and injured and is just starting to play again. And you know, he's also got other good freshmen. And he put it this way. He said, you know, the parents right now are in a good place. The kid understands this is a lot harder than he thought it was going to be. He said, but the people that rated him, and the evaluators are at the pressure those people are putting on him and the critique that he's getting from those people, and the media
crazy
is unrelenting and absolutely making certain kids feel like failures.
Yeah. And those are guys that never played, those are guys that never played, never coached and want something from the kid, you know, and you know, one of the things that Urban didn't
mention, they want to be right. They want to be.
Oh,
right.
Yeah. The evaluators. Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that Urban didn't mention, that he has talked about before is trying to make the kid understand that this is all about team. I mean, he talked a bit about it and how they do it with the different things, but at the end of the day, kid still goes home. You can have all the leadership stuff. You can have everything you want. Kid still goes home. And, you know, winning that kid over to team is not the easiest thing. I think, Seth, we can't do any more, man. And
that was a good one right there,
Urban.
Oh boy.
We want to thank him. He was tremendous.
Check out our brand new ESPN Daily podcast hosted by Mina Kimes. Monday through Friday. On Tuesday this week, she covered the story of how one man stole millions from the Sacramento Kings and almost got away with it. It was a good one if you like hoops. Listen and subscribe now to ESPN Daily wherever you find your podcasts.
And hopefully go to wherever your podcasts are, wherever you get podcasts, download it and rate us. Because quite frankly, this is the world's greatest podcast and it deserves to be rated 10 stars.
You know what starts this week? You know what starts this week?
Tell me.
Feast week. Doesn't get any better. Feast week. Feast week is not a week, by the way.
It's a month.
Feast week is like 14 days.
When will you be on TV? Let everybody know. When will you be on TV?
Well, half of the world's greatest podcast will start on Thursday, Friday, Sunday, Monday, and then every day after that, except for Thanksgiving Day. And then the following week, we have similar type feast week activities where you will be in what? New York?
I'm in New York, starting tonight, actually. I'll be there Thursday, Friday for Duke. I'm going to see Harvard, Yale. I got a Yale or a Harvard.
I like that.
Jacket. So I seem like I'm an
alum. You have a scarf.
Yep. And then next week, Thanksgiving. Yes, I do have a scarf. And then next week, we'll be in Orlando. Hey, thanks to everybody for listening. Have a great, great day, week, whatever it is. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.